Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, folks. We are going to play the, or not play, but have the Ralph Nader debate of the third parties already in progress. Let's listen in. Thanks.
Not for public financing of elections. I'm not for the Democrats getting $100 million and the Republicans getting money for their national conventions. The taxpayers shouldn't be paying for it. And people say, oh, that's just a small part of the budget. The reason we've got a deficit of over $1 trillion, there's a whole lot of things in there. Just a little bit. No one wants to step up to the plate and cut. I agree with Gary. He agrees with me at the last debate in Chicago.
Nos vemos a las tres, Grisura. Nuevo special.
Okay, folks, I don't know what that's about. I'll go check it out. On perhaps we do have a commercial here, which is odd. Back to the debate. Okay, we're trying to get back to the debate. Looks like there's some loading issues here, so we will check it out. If the person in the chat wants the debate comes back on,
can we just come down and
if you could tell me how the sound is good, let me know. Just put it in the chat.
Get on the stick and have some fundraisers, because you know getting money is the key thing to getting to stay here. It shouldn't be about staying here. It should be about doing what's best for America and serving a certain period of time. And our founders really agreed with this, but they didn't think there would be such long term as they are. It would have been in the Constitution. It was in the Articles of Confederation of the Congress before that. That's what we need.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. We are living in a society that is so incredibly divided, never been as divided as since the Gilded Age. In the Gilded Age, there was this financial aristocracy in this country. They had all the perks, all the privileges, and then there was everybody else that was taking care of them and doing the work. Then for 35 or 40 years, we had a thriving, healthy, middle class, a strong economy. Doesn't mean that there weren't people left on the fringes, but by and large, the American economy had been vastly democratized, primarily because of tax policy, where the wealthy were being taxed fairly. They were paying their fair share, unlike today, and because of the strength of unions primarily, and after World War II, one out of three non-agricultural workers, and when they would bargain for higher wages, there was a ripple effect. And also, when they were so strong, there was no way that you would see the kinds of disparities between executive pay compared to working people as we see now. At those times, the ratio was about 30 to 1. Now it's about 300 to 1. The ratio between CEO pay and regular working people. So we can get back to that. We need to, we may never get back to the same status of unions, but we need to do all we can to support working people. 4 years ago, President Obama promised that he would push for the Employee Free Choice Act, and he, if he did it, nobody really heard about it, and it never happened. We've all got to stand behind a movement for fair wages and equal pay for equal work in this country. We also need to change our tax policy to make it more fair and run up these unbelievable budgets that when they, these debts that reach such a high level that the first people that are attacked are vulnerable. And that's exactly what we're seeing now today. Thank you. Our next segment involves audience questions, and there are obviously more than can be handled, but they do break some new ground. The questions will be assigned this way. There'll be two questions to each candidate, and they may be scattered. So if I don't give you fair treatment, just speak up. First to Mr. Goob. From Twitter comes the following question. As president, do you plan to scrap the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which is currently being negotiated in secret, literally in secret, with East Asian countries? Laurie Wallach of Global Trade calls the Trans-Pacific Partnership a WTO on steroids.
I don't know enough details about the Trans-Pacific Partnership, what it means if it's going to not take manufacturing jobs from the United States. That's a plus point. If it's going to impose regulations on the United States that aren't on the Asian countries, that's a negative point. I've got to know details on it. I want something that's going to be fair for the United States and preserve jobs in America or American citizens and not have an arrangement like CAFTA, PNTR with China, MFN with China, which shifted so many manufacturing jobs to China. And our Republican nominee loved making money by our
resort to the lesser of two evils fallacy for deciding their candidate and rule out a third party candidate altogether because they feel they have no chance of winning. What would you say to those voters?
If that's your philosophy, go ahead and vote for Obama. It's not a dime's worth of difference between them. They are not for balancing the budget now. They are not for preserving jobs in America for American citizens first. And they're both going to tell you what you want to hear. They asked Romney in the last debate. He's now for expanding educational funding, more loans, more Pell Grants. I'm for balancing the budget. I'm going to be honest with you. You're not going to get more. You're going to get less because you can't balance the budget the way they're talking about it. They're not going to tell you what they're going to cut. It's going to make somebody mad. And the key is getting reelected or getting elected instead of telling you the truth. And it's time Obama and Romney told the truth rather than just presenting smoke and mirrors to you. It's a choice between Tweedledum and Tweedledee. And if you want that, but if you want somebody that has heart, soul, and conviction, vote for Virgil Goode or consider one of these three candidates.
This question is for Mr. Anderson and Ms. Stein. Quote, you have very ambitious and expensive plans for most of the country's problems. Who pays for this? Mr. Anderson.
We make great investments in the future when we invest like a WPA-like project because, as I said earlier, the best job creators are working people with money in their pockets. We have to look out into the long term. If we don't provide educational opportunities and live up to the promise of equal offer in education, we as a nation are going to suffer in the future. So it's not the time to start cutting back in those areas, but we can save enormous amounts of money by cutting back on our wasteful budget when we're spending about as much as the rest of the world combined on our military, engaging in these wasteful wars of aggression, and when we're supporting military projects only because we want to take the bacon. With wise spending, bringing in the revenues from fair taxation, and making investments in the future, we're all far ahead.
Ms. Stein, who pays for all your ambitious plans?
Well, in fact, these plans actually pay for themselves. Look, for example, at health care as a human right under Medicare. Right now, we're spending 30% of every healthcare dollar on wasteful, massive health insurance bureaucracy, paper pushing, red tape, CEO salaries. That's gobbling up 30% of every healthcare dollar. By simply moving to a streamlined Medicare for all system, we move that with dollars into actual healthcare. That's how we can expand care to cut to cover everybody. And at the same time, single payer systems stop the massive, rapid health insurance inflation, and that inflation, eliminating that, actually saves us trillions of dollars. The Green New Deal jumpstarts the economy. It was that crash of waste, fraud, and abuse on Wall Street that actually caused our revenues to dip. So by jumpstarting the economy, we can restore those revenues, and that will pay for itself.
The housing industry continues to be a big drag on the economy, and those who can least afford it are being hit the hardest with underwater mortgages. What can you do to help, or what would you do to help?
Well, millions of families have already lost their homes, and there are millions more that are in homes that now have a value less than the mortgages on those homes. The fault for that is Wall Street, and even more than that, the great betrayers are those in Congress who have deregulated the financial industry, who repealed Glass-Steagall, who passed during the Clinton administration, as well as repealed Glass-Steagall during his administration, the passage of Commodity Futures Modernization Act, which did away with all these regulations that were put in place to prevent the very kind of meltdown that led to this housing bubble and economic disaster. So we who have been most harmed and are at risk of losing their homes, if we can bail out the banks, we need to be able to provide for at least interest-free loans for those who need to refinance and get back on their feet and keep their homes.
Answer that question, Mr. Johnson.
Well, I think that the meltdown. The mortgage meltdown was people buying houses that they couldn't afford, accommodated by Federal Reserve policy that made money really easy. I would not have bailed out Wall Street. I would not have bailed out the housing market. I would have allowed it to have established a market bottom. Market bottom, there would have been millions of Americans, in my opinion, that would have been able to take advantage of potentially looking or going out and shopping for the $250,000 condominium that they were saving up their money for. And now all of a sudden a market bottom has been reached at $70,000. The government deprived a lot of people of being able to actually establish a real market bottom. And if that would have been established, I think that the recovery that we would be engaged in today would be steady and it would be real.
Thank you. Another question for Mr. Anderson from the audience.
That would be three for Rocky. I'm keeping track. So Jill's got one more, and I've got one more.
Okay. We'll make this for Mr. Johnson. Sorry.
It's all right.
You'll love this one.
Yeah, good.
In such a close presidential election, the chances that one or more of you could tip the election are now pretty high. How do you feel about helping either Obama or Romney in making the difference in the election?
How do I feel about helping either one of them? I don't like helping either one of them at all. The notion here is to end the party, and I'm talking about the two-party system. And there is the opportunity here to really rein on the party. The opportunity here for the Libertarian Party, for me, is to potentially get to 5%, and I have to tell you that is an absolute game-changer. That could change politics in this country for a long time going forward, making third parties viable. In the case of getting to 5%, that would eliminate the need, and I'm speaking broadly now, but pretty accurately, it would eliminate the ballot access issues, the time and the money that all of us have to put into to garner ballot access. And then it also makes a third party, the Libertarian Party, eligible for federal matching funds. And I have to tell you right now, this whole thing has been done on $2 million from our, as opposed to $2 billion for Obama and Romney. That's 1/1000th the cost. Come Tuesday night, do the cost-benefit analysis on who gets the most bang for the buck when it comes to your vote. It's going to be me. I'll take anybody up on that bet.
Thank you.
You got it, Rocky.
No. Stein, what do you think about you and your colleagues being accused by the objective media of siphoning votes
these are their words, stealing votes or being spoiled of the two major party presidential candidates.
Yeah, well, if you ask young people today about this questioning the election, what you hear from them is, spoiling, let's talk about spoiling my future. Let's talk about spoiling my education. Let's talk about spoiling my creditworthiness, spoiling my chance to get a job, and spoiling the climate that I'm going to inherit from this generation of leaders that has created this all-out crisis. They don't care about spoiling some politician's career. They care about their lives that are being spoiled. But let me just point out that in the famous Nader Bush Gore race in 2000, what the exit polls actually showed was that Ralph's votes, in fact, came equally from Democrats and Republicans, and the vast majority came from independents, from Ross Perot voters who would not otherwise have come out to vote. In this election, one out of every two voters is staying home. Our campaign, my campaign, these campaigns here are giving them a reason to come out and vote.
Thank you. We're at the point in this event where the candidates will make their closing statements. 2 minutes each, and please give your website if you choose.
4G LTE is the fastest. So, which...
Okay, folks, let's see if we can get past this commercial before they give their finishing lines. So we'll see. This is not coming from Bard's Law political talk. Excuse me for my voice today. This is coming from where it's being piped in. So... if we can just hold on briefly, hopefully, then we will have the debate back on. If not, it looks like here we go. Perhaps. Let's hope. It's trying.
But I think, when it comes to Obama and Romney, that there's not a bit of difference between the two. During the Biden-Ryan debate, Ryan, at the end of the debate, says, look, we're going to increase spending by 3%. They're going to increase spending by 4.5%. Well, there's no big deal when it comes to the two of them. They're not addressing the issues that we are facing. If we don't balance the federal budget now, if we don't create an environment for job creation in this country, we're doomed. And that's what we're looking at, and that's the alternative right here. So I'm making a pitch. I'm making a pitch to everybody that wasting your vote is voting for somebody you don't believe in. Vote for who you believe in. That's how you change things. And I want to make a pitch to every single one of you to consider voting for me. Take your neighbors by the collar. Get them with just 2 days to go to get on Gary Johnson 2012. Check it out. Check it out. See if I am not addressing the issues. See if I don't have a resume to suggest that I'm not going to doggedly pursue everything it is that I'm talking about.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. Beginning to feel sorry for Mount Everest.
Yes, you know, it's sort of like the time of reckoning is here right now, because we have an economy that's continuing to unravel. Both Mitt Romney and Barack Obama would continue to send our jobs overseas with these expanding free trade agreements, continue to undermine wages, where one out of every two Americans is now in poverty. 36 million students are effectively indentured servants. Millions of homeowners continue to lose their homes, while the wealthy few are wealthier than ever, rolling in dough, and they're continuing to squander trillions of dollars on war. Wars, Wall Street bailouts, and tax breaks for the wealthy. The news is that we can fix this by standing up now for what we need. And to stand up, that means voting green and making your vote count. Don't go in and vote for more of what's been driving us over the cliff. That's not just wasting your vote. It's actually using your vote as a weapon against yourself. Instead, stand up and vote for what we need. The Green Party actually advances the majoritarian agenda that large majorities of Americans are already supporting on poll after poll, creating jobs right now through a Green New Deal that will end climate change, put a halt to unemployment, and make wars for oil obsolete. We're calling for health care as a human right through Medicare for All that covers everyone while saving us trillions of dollars over the coming decade. We call for ending student debt, bailing out the students and not the banks, and making public higher education free because we owe it to our younger generation to get them started with economic security as they begin their careers. And finally, we will downsize the military budget, right-size it. These are the solutions people support. If word were to get out and go viral, there are 36 million students out there who could go to the polls and end student debt and turn politics in this country on its head forever. Go to JillStein.org and join the team.
Thank you. Mr. Goop, 2 minutes. Closing statement.
The platform of the Constitution Party and of the Virgil Goode, Jim Clyman ticket says, save America, citizenship matters. I am different from Romney, Obama, and the three others on this stage. I am the only consistent and true pro-life candidate for president. I am the only consistent and true candidate that believes that marriage should be between one man and one woman. I am a budget now, not 10 years down the road. I have the courage to cut. Obama and Romney certainly do not. And I recognize, unlike any of the other presidential candidates, that we need jobs in America for American citizens first. And that means ending illegal immigration. That means reducing jobs in this country who have paid taxes for decades and days, need jobs and want jobs. It should count for something, and it will, under Virgil Goode administration. Lastly, to change the stranglehold of big money on our political, the federal level, no union donations, no corporate donations, no PAC donations, no super PACs, individuals only, and have term limits with the members of Congress and Senate. After they're out of Congress or out of the Senate, they can't be lobbyists. Citizenship something, save us for Goode and Clyman.
Thank you, Mr. Goode. Mr. Anderson, we are at a pivotal moral point in our nation's history. We've all suffered. Our government selling out to Wall Street. Young people are burdened by record crushing tuition debt. Millions of families have lost their homes. Young retirement plans have been decimated while Wall Street fat cats who buy our election have made out like bandits. There has never been such a disparity between wealth and income in this nation since the 1920s. Rate today is higher than at any time since 1965, before the war on poverty. Child poverty and infant mortality rates in the United States are next to the worst in the developed world, and the United States rate of women dying in connection with pregnancy or birth is the worst among 50 nations. And under Obamacare, we'll still have 30 million people without essential health care in the United States of America. And under Bush and Obama, our Constitution has been shredded while the imperial presidency has been expanded with presidents who think that they have the unilateral power to take our nation to war, often on a pack of lies, with presidents who believe the federal government should imprison anybody, including U.S. citizens, without charges, without trial, without legal representation, and without the right of habeas corpus, and now with the president who targets U.S. citizens for assassination.
And our elected officials are sound asleep when the Pentagon is warning that climate change is the global stability. So if you like what we're getting now, vote Democrat. But if you want to see change, even though it may not come in this election, vote your conscience and vote for justice, economic justice, social justice, and environmental justice.
Thank you. Includes the part of the debate where the candidates made their summary statements. I'd like to make a few concluding remarks. There are no suites here. There are no corporate contributions to this. Event. We need more debates. We should not ration debates. Some of the gentlemen here on my left have debated their opponents for municipal and gubernatorial races 28 to 50 times around their jurisdictions. We should not ration debates. We should expand debates regionally all over the country in 16. Where organizations from business, labor, civic, you name it, come together and demand that the presidential candidates come to their communities to debate. If it doesn't allow seeds to sprout, we'll decay. Our two-party duopoly does almost everything it can to make sure seeds of alternative political candidacies and a competitive democracy do not sprout. So it takes more courage to spend day after day going all over the country, as these candidates have done, up against an entrenched skeptic by many people born of a sense of powerlessness and an ultimatum of minimal choice between the two major parties. On behalf of all of us, organize this vibrant event, John Richard and his stalwart colleagues, and the provider's venue, Democracy's Restaurateur, Andy Shalal, I wish to thank these presidential candidates of 2012, Gary Johnson, Jill Stein, Virgil Goode, Rocky Anderson. I want to thank them for breaking more new ground for those who come after them in the following presidential elections. Thanks also to the engaged audience here and around the country who believe electoral debates should contend with what's on people's minds, not just what flows into candidates' pockets. May you all continue back to be, in Thomas Jefferson's word, participators in shaping solutions for a just free society. We stand adjourned.
Okay, folks, this said once again, sorry about the voice tonight. I was actually at a high school football game last night in which my alma mater was playing in a playoff game. And, well, it was a very exciting game. It was great. The home team won, my team won, but not without the cost of some of my voice. But that's okay. Sometimes we have to sacrifice for those things. But at this time, I'd like to bring on our panelists, which you well know, one of them, which is Chris. Chris, I am opening up your mic, which is live. Thank you very much. So what did you just say? Excuse me.
Well, what did I think? Can I scream? God, we had three computers going, trying to keep this thing up and running.
Yeah,
I think I got about 30% of it. I know based on some of the questions that they were doing that they had some good questions, you know, that they went in depth on stuff, but I don't think we're going to get the answers on this stuff until tomorrow when this comes out on YouTube. I heard that it'll be, you know, somebody who is connected, you know, somehow, or made a call, or who knows, you know, exactly. But somebody posted that it'll be out on YouTube, because I do want to watch it. I wanted to watch it. We shut everything down, you know, to do this. And
right.
So we got bits and pieces of things.
Right. Well,
I'm moving around as
five pages of notes. So.
Yeah, I did too, but you know, I would get off track a little bit because I'd be like shutting one computer down or trying to boot it, you know, bring it up
pages.
On another page.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah, I understand. It was interesting trying to get the finagle to get to be able to actually listen to it, and it did run about a half hour long, which is fine. Because the last half hour didn't seem to be. But one thing I did find interesting for those of you who are watching the debate or listening to it is I noticed that when they were on break, that there didn't seem to be as much interruption. I wonder if there was somebody who was very technical savvy decided to try to put some fly in the ointment, so to speak, a little bit.
I'm sure. Well. You know, you've heard what I say about Ustream to begin with. You know, I've never,
right.
I mean, I tried to watch Ustream stuff through the whole primary. You know, there were some Paul events and some events at the RNC convention and stuff. And Ustream is just, you know, it's one of the first ones out there, but they just never have improved it. You know,
mm-hmm. Sad. Well, I'll tell you what. Well, also noticed that when Nader was actually asking the questions, there wasn't as much interruption as if when they were giving the answers. But I won't whine and moan anymore. I'll just get back to the meat, which is what people really want to hear tonight, I'm sure, about what we
yeah,
hear from
well,
it.
Well, let me get to my my notes, everything. I'm moving out of my son's room so my wife can boot up the computer and play the show for my
sure.
son.
Sure, if anybody would like to call in tonight while you're doing that, Chris, I'll give a plug out. If anyone would like to go to the show to come in and chime in about the debate tonight, the caller number is area code 347-945-7428. And also, well, you got a little background noise there on Chris. I'll give him a minute. And then also... I like to, as I usually start out every show, is thank everyone for coming tonight, whether you are listening live from Blog Talk Radio or from the Bard's Logic Political Talk website or some of the other venues, or if you are participating in chat. And if you are a new person coming in to listen to the show in any of the venues, thank you very much. And also, you can follow the show if you are listening on Blog Talk Radio by just clicking the little follow button. That is underneath the show's archive on the homepage. And also by going to the Bard's Logic Political Talk website, and I think this would be a great Christmas gift. Actually, I'm planning on doing it myself for my daughters. You can go to the website and see where you can go to the Sheldrick Wildlife Trust, and there you can sponsor or adopt for just $50 a year a baby elephant whose parents were killed by poachers over in, excuse me, let's get for my voice, over in Africa. And it's a great organization, great cause, and some great people. I did have the opportunity to interview a couple of the folks from there some time ago, and the interview can be listened to in the archives of this show. So hopefully Chris is back from doing his move, so I will open up your mic again. Chris, and as a fellow, as a final thought on the Sheldrick Wildlife Trust and adopting a elephant. Of course, it still lives there. They have an orphanage there, which helps to fund, the care of the elephant that there in Kenya. But if you do adopt one, just give a message to me through the contact page of the Bard's Logic Political Talk website and. Just let me know that you sponsored one and any other details you'd like to give, and I'll give you a shout-out here on the show, which will find its way to the archives, and I'd appreciate it, and thank you very much. So, Chris, hopefully you're back, and so I'll put the floor to you. Go ahead.
Well, trying to get my brain around everything. I noticed that Stein, I really love the part because she blamed the hurricane on global warming. And Good had the next conversation or the next segment, and he talked about all the storms of the past before we supposedly have impacted the world.
Yeah, I noticed that.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty. I enjoyed that because, you know, they're going to take every, you know, if the world hiccups, if the wind blows left, it's global warming. If it blows right, it's global warming. We have a hurricane.
Global climate change.
We've never had it. We've never had a hurricane before. You know, we've never had superstorms. No. So, you know, and then I know Rocky likes to run that too. He almost said, now, she's full bore. You know what I mean? She's full bore. You know, we're destroying the earth, and it's the greatest atrocity in the world, and you need to let me in power so I can take $20 trillion of your children's future and make jobs for everybody. You know, she's full, that's her statement, full bore. Rocky, you can listen to him. Sometimes he almost sounds sane, and then he starts to sweep towards that, what was that called? There was a three-letter acronym. In the New Deal, you know, for putting everybody back to work. I used to have notes on all this stuff. But, you know, he basically wants to do that again, you know, where everybody goes back to work, rebuilding the infrastructure of America. I mean, these people are, they're out there. I really wish that Johnson and Good and Stein and Rocky would have split off somewhere in this last month. And actually had a couple debates, and I think they could have set that up. I don't think that would have been that difficult to set up an environment, find a reputable host, you know, and pipe it on something besides Ustream. That would have been great. I would have loved to hear, you know, that way the green social liberal communists could have debated each other on who's going to spend more money, and the two fiscal conservative, you know, libertarian, you know what I'm saying, those two could have got together and had a real debate over, you know, how we're going to solve the problems versus spend another $20 trillion.
Well, I know one of the ways that Good was talking about solving the problem is fair trade, not fear, free trade, and also his new card, no green cards, putting a moratorium on green cards until unemployment gets down to 5%. And then also, Obamacare, he mentioned that it is destroying small business, or will destroy small businesses or hurt them. And then talking about a fair tax, talk about the 23%, but instead of a fair tax, a sales tax with a broad base lower rate. Some of the things that Google was talking about.
Well, you and I interviewed him, and we've always, anybody with
twice,
a thinking mind, you know, anybody with a thinking mind knows that, just like with Kane came up with his 999 thing, you can't just go out there and add another tax to the existing system, you know, with our income tax amendment and the Fed, you know, being developed. In 1913, you can't just go give them another tax, because if you do, then they won't fix the other ones. That's the problem with these dynamic tax changes, is that you have to get in and eliminate that amendment and get rid of that IRS power, and you have to go, and you probably, well, you might be able to stage step it, but if you don't get rid of the Fed, then it's always going to come back. These crooked politicians are never going to fix the income tax system as long as the Fed can print money and bill it to your great-great-great-grandchildren. That's a huge issue. And so it's really and you remember when we interviewed Good, he talked about this. He said there's a lot of things. Remember, he said, I got to look at that before I can give you a real answer at that, because it's not as easy as people think it is. You know, I know Herman Cain loved that 999. I hated it. You know why? Because I knew that the IRS was still in power. So it's 999, and now it's 10-10-10, 12-12-12, 20-20-20.
Right,
you could
change.
Because you haven't solved the problem. You have to fix the system before you can do these dynamic changes in tax structures.
One thing Johnson did mention was about the Fed giving money to the banks at 0%. Now, we don't get that.
Oh, it's going to kill us. It's going to kill us. Yeah, wait until that shifts. Sorry, go ahead.
You know, well, yeah, and he was talking about, you know, the Fed giving the banks, you know, you know, loans or what have you for at 0%, but and then we, the people, you know, I would give Johnson that. Even to the we don't get that kind of a deal.
No. Well, it's all a game. You know, every time the Fed prints money, you know, inflation is coming. I mean, the only reason, there's just so much to this. I mean, there's a whole conversation around taxation and inflation. We are suppressing the interest rates because of the games the Fed is playing while they go through QE1, you know, the bailout QE1, 2, and now 3. When they are done and this all finally reboots, your dollar is going to be half again what it's worth. I'm sorry if that bothers anybody. I'll use the good analogy. You're going to hear the truth on this one. People need to understand this. You know, I mean, look at your basic cost of groceries right now and look at gas. Two of the most key impact issues in a struggling family is food and gas. You know, and so they're huge. I mean, they're jumping 20, 30, 40%. And it isn't even started.
Well, and one of the things, and you bring that up, Chris, one of the things, you know, I always like to bring up when people pose those kind of problems is like, okay, well, what's the solution? Let's work on it. We know what the, you know, once we know what the problems is, as you said, then, you know, it's time to start working on the solutions. What do we do in order to either curtail it or turn things around? I mean, that's a discussion that's equally important to
Costa,
do as well.
Costa Rica.
Wait, so move to Costa Rica? No.
Yeah.
Move to Costa Rica.
No, this is real stuff. Here's the problem. Nobody's talking about solutions. No,
right.
The only people talking about
point,
solutions, the only people talking about solutions in all the people running that are in the debate cycle, because there's some people that aren't, like Holflein and things like that, are people who talk about balancing the budget, cutting government. You know, when you look at, you know, and like, you know that. We've interviewed these guys.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to get rid of these illegal departments. There's got to be – I mean, I watched a video the other day that showed the increase in federal wages for federal employees and the numbers during this recession. And I'm like – or depression or whatever the heck you want to call it. And I'm like going, you've got to be kidding me. You know, the amount of people making over $100,000 a year, like, quadrupled, while everybody else can't pay their bills. I mean, while they're losing their homes. So, you know, the solution, quit voting for crooks who lie to you. Quit voting out of fear. Quit empowering these people who are telling you they're going to fix it when not, and when like Romney or Obama, who's, you know, especially Romney, who hasn't outlined a plan for anything. That man is like deer guts on a doorknob. He is slick. You know, I still haven't heard he's going to raise taxes. He's going to not raise taxes, but he's going to cut loopholes, but he's going to do this and he's going to do that. And he's going to repeal Obamacare. Well, no, he's going to repeal and replace. You know, he has no plan. He likes Bernanke. He thinks he's doing a great job. Excuse me. That man is destroying the base of our economy, and Romney thinks he's a wonderful guy. Well, of course he does, because as our economy moves to Europe and to China, you know, as all this debt, you know, is leveraging us against the world, these guys that with these trade deals, like Virgil Goode was talking about, you know, these trade deals have opened the door for these corporations to just fly out of this country. These are trade deals that are put on by your government. In our interview with Virgil Goode, he went, you know, I pinned him down on that, and he kind of went through, you know, more details on these trade deals, because I was a little bit naive to it. And now I go, oh, my gosh, that's your government. You've got to remove the power from the federal government because they're destroying our country. They're destroying our economy. They're destroying the value of our dollar. They're moving the resources, the productivity, because wealth is created in America. If you look at the explosion of this country and the wealth in this country is off of manufacturing. You know, that resource, if you pull a resource out of the ground, ship it to Japan or China to be manufactured, all the wealth creation is in processing the ore and taking it all the way to a final product. The more times you process it, in your country, if you go from metal or all the way to a needle, that's like maximizing, you know what I mean, the numbers of times that metal gets processed. That's what creates wealth. That's what creates the stability of a country. That's gone in this country. It isn't going away. It was going away in the 80s and 90s.
Yeah, well, nope, I remember first things are going over to Japan, and then, you know, and now it's looking like it's moving over to, you know, well, not looks like, but now it's over to China. But, yeah, we've, you know, it was about a two-hour debate or so or something like that. You know, we do have some notes here, Chris, and I'd like to go, you know.
You bet.
Going through the debate, and, you know, the first thing, of course, we're talking about, of course, Jill Stein was talking about the new Green Deal, or New Deal, the Green New Deal. Yeah, and then, you know, Anderson was talking about 60% of jobs, you know, being mid-paying jobs, things of that nature. But now this is where things are breaking up. Did he say something about a $10.55 minimum wage? Did you get that? Or maybe
at least that. I've heard him say that before. He said proportionally to be equal of what it was, I don't know, a decade ago, you know, based on the economy.
Right, based on inflation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's a socialist. That's cool. We already know what they are.
Well, yeah, bringing minimum wage up to $10.55, I mean, all that's going to do is increase prices. That's not going to... You know, that's not going to do it.
All that's going to guarantee is that nobody hires any young people or low-skilled people. These people just, they never give up.
Right.
Yeah, liberalism is a mental disorder. Michael Savage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I always believe that. They believe that all these corporations are hoarding wealth, which in some ways they are true. But
right.
They believe that they can get all that wealth from them, and that'll fix all the woes of the country. They negate every basic concept of socialism, and giving something away for nothing does not work. You know, I remember Jill Stein said, "Well, we give away, you know, K-12, first grade through 12, and we give that away, and we should do it for college." Well, they're children at that point in their lives. You know what I mean? They're growing up. They have responsibilities. They have to get through these grades. By the time they're 18, you're an adult now. You know what I mean? Let's just give you more. You know, I'll give you more and more and more. And then you can be just like the rest of them and occupy Wall Street and go, "I have student loans." Well, yeah, every generation before you did too. So shut up.
Yeah, but there are some parts of that I do agree with, though, Chris. I mean, you know, the reason why, and they're talking about the access to all these student loans, and it makes it so easy, and so colleges can jack their prices up because I know they're going to get this money.
Yeah, it's government funded. Yeah, well, it's a government intervention issue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, get the federal government out of our lives, out of our businesses, out of our colleges, out of our school systems. Maybe they'd actually, if you get the federal government out of Department of Education, that kids would actually get an education again, because schools would have to actually perform. But I'll tell you, Johnson and Goode, I want to hear these guys debate, you know, without all this socialism and communism and stuff in the middle of it. I think that would just be awesome, because I just, you know, when I listen to Johnson talk on economic issues, he's right on. You know, and I'd like to hear them debate and then get past those things that they are parallel on or you know, close to each other on, and then they can get into the other things that are important to people, and that's the social issues. You know, whether we're going to have a totally free, do what feels good society with open borders and free drugs for all, well, freedom to do drugs for all, or a little bit more social conservative perspective. I'd love to hear that debate.
Yeah, well, within this debate, they one of the first things, of course, after talking briefly about the economy, they moved over to energy. And, of course, the first thing Joel Stein had to talk about was climate change. You know, and how the all of the above policy has, you know, pretty much caused, you know, climate change, which, you know, I am an environmentalist, as you well know, but you know, I'm not on board with the whole global climate change, you know, especially when they talk about global warming, especially when they don't take into account, you know, the sun. So it just seems to take, you know what I mean? So, but Johnson,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, we could just, hey, you know what? If we could start a new program to control the sun and everybody pay another 10% for that program, then maybe we get control of this.
Maybe we could find a way to, you know, if we could find a way to control the sun, that'd be nice.
Yeah, we got
to
get those solar flares under control.
Yeah.
Or orbital fluctuation. We need a program for that.
Indeed. You know, well, and then, you know, Johnson, he was talking about, you know, of course, the, you know, he agrees with the, all of the above, you know, all of the above.
I think strategy. I think we need to get to the moon and get that, what is that, helium-3?
Helium-3. Hey, I agree with that. Well, it's Anderson, he was talking about, you know, no gas, no oil, no nuclear, and I'm sure Stein, you know, is in agreement with that. But I'm not a big fan of nuclear power either. I'm really not. You know, there's just too much, you know, with nuclear waste, storage, you know, things of that nature.
Oh,
now,
God, don't get me started on nuclear power.
Yeah, well,
do you know how long ago they built the technology, designed it, and had it in place for reprocessing fuel almost indefinitely so you didn't have to worry about waste disposal or storage? Do you know who shut that down? The frickin' hippies of the 60s and 70s, because it was the anti-nuke thing spilled over into our politics on nuclear energy. Come on, my dad's a nuclear physicist. I grew up with this stuff. We ship, you know, our for, like France, they buy our waste and they reprocess it and turn it into new fuel rods.
Well, and I studied France, actually, when I was talking about this earlier before the...
We have shut down billions and billions of dollars of utility companies, lost all that money because of politicians developing that technology and the processes and the plants, and then they had to walk away from them because the government shut it down because of voters.
Well,
in this country.
But speaking of France... But, you know, because I won't go over this extensively, but I will cover this more during after the election when I go back to having Green Thursdays and talk about environmental issues. It's, yeah, France does recycle some of that nuclear waste, but they only recycle 20% of it.
Yeah, well, that was a start. Can you imagine how much we could have reprocessed if after all those billions of dollars were spent in this country if we would have let the technology run?
Yeah,
my brother decommissions old nuclear power plants so they can build new high efficient plants that are like a fraction of the size and 100 times more efficient. He was in Ireland doing it.
Well, actually that's one of the things that Ireland's real big into, because they don't want to have a lot of incinerators and things of that nature, and of course all the other power plants, and they're looking at hydro too, of course, being an island nation. But no, as a sector,
sure.
I mean, you know, France, they only do 20%, but I want to bring it back to helium-3 briefly, you know, that would be not only would that be a cleaner burning fuel, but instead of it being nuclear fission, which causes all the radioactivity, if we were to use helium-3, then we could use nuclear fusion, which is, as you know, you said your dad's, you know, nuclear physicist, that is clean burning, and nuclear fusion does not have the radioactivity as nuclear fission does.
Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah, the technology, you know, the bottom line is you can't find solutions if whole technologies are shut down. You know,
it's
very
difficult. Well, so my understanding, the electric car, was coming out in the Carter administration, but you had some, you know, oil companies that pretty much bought out the rights to them, you know, because it pretty much would shut them down. They pretty much had, But moving on, we're on energy, and you know, Stein, of course, trying to blame, you know, of course, Hurricane Sandy on, you know, what's going on. And I knew that was going to happen. I mean, I knew that, you know, the those folks were going to blame Sandy on the whole global climate change thing. But then, of course, you know, we seen Goode brought up other natural disasters, you know, and kind of counteracted that.
But what's with Anderson, you know, no gas, no oil, you know, no nuclear?
I guess he wants us to live in mud huts.
Yep.
Mud huts. Well, as long as he's got control of it, that's the key.
One of the things Johnson, remember Johnson asked Anderson, well, how did you get here? He said, Yeah. And Anderson
was like,
well,
I couldn't have got here to give him this message.
Exactly.
You could have done it on the internet from your home, and somebody could have set up a screen there and put your face on it.
There you go. Exactly. True to form. If you're that strong in your convention, say, look, I could do this debate. Just put up a screen of me, you know, here, and I could do a webcam thing, and that's not, you know, and I wouldn't have to burn the fossil fuels in order to get there to do this method. And that's kind of like what Gore does too. Yeah, that's where the hypocrisy
they
comes.
They fly around in their private jets to
right, but they're allowed
that
to do
conference.
That. Right, they're allowed to do that because they're the ones trying to make a difference. But us as regular people, you know, they don't want us doing it, because we're not making as big of an impact on trying to save the environment as they are, which I don't believe. But
yeah, socialists and communists—that's all they are. So anyway,
Yeah, Chris.
Go ahead.
I was just looking
at the notes.
Oh, well, next was the third question. So I think sounds like it might be one of your favorite ones, is the militarization of foreign policy.
Yeah, I thought that was really good. I mean, I'm not sure what, you know, we were having a lot of breakup at that point in time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we were struggling really hard to hear the debate, I love how good, you know, Johnson has, and I'll give him credit for this, but he's made some changes in his foreign policy. You know, I think he's worked really hard and finally kind of got his message down, kind of mirror Dr. Paul's. But, you know, he's had some different policies on that through this last year. But, you know, Constitution Party's been rock solid on no unconstitutional wars. And I like the way that Goode approaches this, because he's not saying, you know, that, well, we can't go to war. He's not saying that we don't have the right to go to war. He's saying that there's a constitutional process and Congress has to approve it. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, we do have, and of course we have the benefit of having interviewed, you know, Goode and Clymer. Goomer, oh my God,
yeah.
I'll never live that down. Interviewing them and really getting into depth on their issues with foreign policy. And
mm-hmm.
And I really like it because, you know, they say, hey, you have to be responsible. We have trade deals with countries. You know, you don't just get up and pull all your military home and say, hey, have a good time, the rest of the world. We have responsibilities out there. We are all over the world. We are involved in trade policies. We are involved
mm-hmm.
with, treaties, and we have responsibilities. So you just don't get up, you know, I believe it's a political game when you
mm-hmm.
tell people, oh, we're just going to bring them all home, and everybody goes, yeah, I'm so excited. Oh, that's bull crap.
You can't do that. You're right. We do have agreements. One agreement I'd like to talk more about, not tonight, of course, but I'd like to put more time on a show, is about the Taiwan Relations Act. Our relation, especially in lieu with the rise of China. I think that'd be something I'd like to talk about. But one thing that brought up, and then I see that Rex from the Rex and Tower, the Tex and Rex show, is on the line, and I'll open up the mic shortly. They were talking about the Eisenhower in 61, talking about the military-industrial complex, and the last thing, and then we could talk about this a little more extensively, when they said, and I'm paraphrasing the question here, is how would you deal as president with the humanitarianism as a superpower? Remember when you said that?
Did you open up the mic to Rex?
Not yet, but I'll
go ahead. Bring him on. Bring him on.
I want to pose the question first. And of course, as I said, I open up his mic. Of course, folks, this is
Rex from the Tex and Rex Show. Go ahead, Rex, open up the mic, and then I'll want to see if you, I know you got to see some of the debate tonight or listen to some of the debate, but did you catch that part when they're talking about, you know, United States as a humanitarian superpower?
I think I heard something to that effect, but the debate tonight was pretty much a cluster cluck, so, you know, it was intermittent for most of the time. So, mm-hmm. you know, I can't say that I got most of it until towards the end when it finally started running on Ustream as opposed to that other whatever it was. But, you know, I still find it interesting, this whole humanitarian war idea, which
yeah.
I think Johnson stepped in it a few times in the past. He sort of corrected, but I mean, you know, look, there's crises all over the world. There's genocides, tribal fighting, small scale regional conflicts. If we're going to get involved in every single humanitarian crisis on a planet of 7 billion people, I mean, come on, that's just completely unrealistic. So, you know, I think that the best way you handle these things is you lead by example. You solve your humanitarian problems at home, and if anybody screws with you, you kick their ass. Other than that, you don't get into it militarily. But I think Johnson has walked that back a little bit, but I don't know that I trust
yeah.
his position when he was, you know, for humanitarian wars. He wanted to go in after Kony, which is a dubious conflict to begin with, you know, so I don't know. But I found it interesting that Ralph Nader did this because it shows, you know, that he's a principled man vis-a-vis debate and voices and liberty. But, you know, obviously,
mm-hmm.
obviously his bias showed a little teeny bit because he gave Stein and Anderson a little bit more play than Good and Johnson.
And plus, I think he could have picked a better venue. But, you know, I mean, it was
well,
great that they had,
the
and I appreciate
really,
they had that, so.
Yeah, the venue is really not that bad, and I guess, you know, since he was throwing it together last minute following the first Free and Equal debate, you know, it's not a terrible thing. I mean, that place is a little bit too bohemian for my taste, but it's not bad. The problem was the technology issue of...
That's what
of,
I meant, yeah. Let me clarify that, Rex. Actually, yeah, not the actual, like, restaurant that it was in, but I'm talking about the technical difficulties that seem to be abound tonight.
Yeah, and, you know, again, I think that the unfortunate aspect of it was throwing this thing last minute because I really think that Free and Equal stepped in it. I mean, they put on a great debate hosted by or moderated with Larry King and Ms. Tobin, I think her name was,
mm-hmm.
which was really good. And then, you know, they had this, you know, quote, online vote to see who would be in the runoff, which is, you know, that's BS. I mean, they should have just done another one with all four of them. And so tomorrow night's Free and Equal is only Stein and Johnson, which
right.
is an interesting debate because you kind of have, at least vis-a-vis economics, socialism on one side and free markets on the other. But I think that looking at the debate tonight, they really stepped in it because the outstanding debaters turned out to be Johnson and Good. And,
yeah.
You know, unfortunately, and it's not just because they're socialists or liberals that I have a problem with it, but unfortunately, Anderson and Stein both tend to be rather incoherent.
Yeah.
I'm not
mm-hmm.
sure
and
which, you know, Anderson.
Thing.
Yeah, I don't know what. Yeah, it's not exciting because they just kind of repeat each other. And,
right.
You know, but I think that Free and Equal should have done all four. In the second debate, they should have planned it out a little bit better, and hopefully, you know, some lessons will be learned this time to propel this going forward. But at least it's there, and hopefully the YouTube link that will be available tomorrow will be better quality than the Ustream tonight, and hopefully it'll get out there so people can see it, because we all know that there are 90 million people who aren't voting. If someone could get this in their hands, I think
right.
a lot of those 90 million might go, hey, you know what? I heard something that I actually like.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I might
well, you know what
go out and vote.
What I really liked at the end there when they really went after and Nader has experienced this. I mean, the guy's been blocked from debates. He's tried to run for president.
Right.
You know, he was stopped. You know, there's that YouTube video of him not – he had a ticket and they wouldn't even let him in as an audience, you know, for that one debate. And, you know, it's just – I think that – he really finished it up well because they really went after that. You know, the what was it, the word that you actually retyped it in the chat?
the term that he used. But, you know, getting out there, he was using that analogy of how many debates go on just for our local and state houses, you know.
Right.
And we need, people need to hear the options.
Right.
These two clowns that we have running against each other right now is absolutely, I mean, it's almost become more horrific as it goes. Watching them, listening to them, $200 million spent in Ohio alone, 91% of the ads were negative.
I don't know why they spent money in Ohio. Do they really spend money in Ohio? I mean, doesn't Hart Intercivic already have the outcome determined?
I don't know.
It's just mind-boggling to me what the money that's been spent, the abuses, the lies.
It's a stimulus.
They tore Romney to shreds on all the statements he was making.
Right. I seen a Good sign actually in a busy street some days ago. And I was passing the same spot, and there was a lot more, Romney Ryan and then Steve Chabot and this and that over here. And I was driving past the same spot where this Good Climber sign was, and it was gone. Someone took the sign. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. You know, I mean.
That was Ann Romney.
Yeah. Yeah, she came to Ohio or had one of her minions come and pick it up. I'm just like, unbelievable. You know, people are like, oh, so what? So someone took a sign. It's just indicative of what these two parties would do in order to quiet the third party. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
to make people think that there's not an option. You hear so many people, you know, oh, well, you know, you vote for a third party, you're just throwing your vote away. Actually, I was at a football game, as I said last night, my old high school was, you know, in a playoff game. That's why I lost a good part of my voice. But, you know, this guy had a button, and it kind of looked, you know, like a button I've seen before for other candidates. And, you know, I start talking third party with them. Oh, they can't ever win. It's like, you know, that's the mindset, you know. But the reason why the mindset is just like what happened with, Newt Gingrich and Ron Paul in the primaries is out of sight, out of mind. The Republicans, the Democrats, I mean, even as something as simple as trying to take a sign out or doing everything they can to keep the third parties from being out of sight, out of mind because they don't want to. Now, what does that say, you know, about them if they're trying to keep, you know, this option away from the people?
It says less about them than it says about us.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's all about us, you mean?
Yeah. I mean, look. These two, quote, parties, okay, if you want to actually consider them two parties, because frankly it's really not. It's just one party with two facets. You know, they've got the game locked up. So they got the money, they get the power, you know, they're running the show. Why wouldn't they exclude third parties? It just makes logical sense. If you're looking for a monopoly presented as a duopoly, then that's what you would do. But the problem is that the only way they were able to get away with it is because we're lazy and stupid. We're entertained, we're fat, we're happy, we're affluent, so we don't care. You know, politics isn't my thing, I don't get involved. You know, I'm not
really
concerned.
Yeah, you hear that a lot.
So, you know, with that kind of mentality, the alternate voice has been shut out completely. And so, you know, look at it tonight. I mean, Nader was talking about, you know, civic involvement or something like that. This is on a debate that has four legitimate presidential candidates, all with access to 270 electors that are actually debating real issues and talking about stuff that the others won't talk about. And you had less than 1,000 people streaming it in a country of 300 billion. Well, there's your problem. That's the problem. We allow the Democrats and the Republicans to do this. And as long as we're allowing it, it's going to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did find that kind of disconcerting.
The biggest abuse I've seen is not just the money spent on ads and or the signs or somebody stealing your sign or anything else, but it's people, individual people getting up and attacking other people for trying to make a good decision with their vote. And that goes back to what Rex was just saying. It's the people.
you know, because I look at the numbers of people that we've experienced, us three, four, five, six of us that do this every day, you know, and the people that we know, the amount of abuse that ex-Newt supporters or ex-whatever supporters have done on the social networks to literally just abuse the hell out of people into compliance. That is the one that shows you at the human level how people think. Because you know they're going to, I mean, you know what I'm saying? That's the one that's just kind of like, wow. If this is
well,
the best decision,
that's the only one that matters.
Make, yeah. If this is
the
best,
the only reason
the
duopoly exists, the only reason the oligarchs have power is because we do these stupid things to each other where we focus our energies and our anger on our fellow citizens as opposed to the corrupt politicians. And if you look in history, any time you've had fascism rise, it's never been because the dictator was so charismatic or so appealing or had solutions. Right? It's always been because the people want it.
Well,
the people want it.
And speaking of what you're saying earlier, because I was spending a few moments to look something up, is, you know, there's a tweet, and I don't Twitter a lot. Should probably get more on Twitter and stuff like that because it is a good venue. It was, you know, someone with tweeting, it said, you know, a true American patriot to follow, and, you know, it was mentioned in the tweet. And then someone came back and talked, tweeted back to him and said, oh, no, that's – for one, I was called an Obama troll. You talk about the people being attacked. But they're like, they talk about me. It's like, oh, isn't he a third part, one of those third-party freaks? So you can't be an American patriot. So basically what you're saying, you know, he's like, oh, this is an American patriot, you know, for freedom, liberty, whatever. And then she's like, well, wait a minute. You're calling this guy a patriot. But isn't he one of those third-party freaks? And I was like, is that really the mindset? So if you're someone who's promoting or would vote for a third party, you're somehow a freak because you're not falling under, you know, the category of either one of these two parties.
You're not
parties.
Conforming. Yeah.
You're not conforming.
Well, here's
Thank
the bottom
you,
line. Here's the bottom line is it's the Constitution, stupid.
Mm-hmm.
That it isn't about a third
yeah.
party. You know what I mean? Because we had four parties on there tonight. We got two parties, you know, in the criminal element. We got a couple other fringe parties. But the bottom line is who speaks for the Constitution, the founding documents of this country, the documents that gave us a free people unlike anything else in the history of the world. They gave us prosperity unlike any country before. And that is what it's about.
You
it
know,
isn't
and,
about a third party. It's about the Constitution, stupid. Sorry,
and then it is one thing that I would have liked to have seen more on this debate tonight was them talk more about the Constitution. Of course, maybe, you know, because there was a Constitution Party person, maybe is more avoided, you know, just not show any kind
yeah.
of favoritism or something.
Well,
I don't know.
Yeah, because you got
the
two
Constitution.
Socialists. You got two socialists there that want to step all over the Constitution.
Well, but let's be clear about a couple of things. I mean, it was brought up a couple of times, and the duopoly was brought up. But I think that obviously
and
Anderson
that
and Stein
Anderson,
have a,
right.
Yeah, but they both have a
duopoly.
Right. They both have a odd understanding of the Constitution because the U.S. Constitution and socialism are incompatible. But barring that, at least when it came to civil liberties, they addressed the Constitution. In the duopoly debates, we never talked about anything like that. And in the news media,
yeah.
nothing like that is talked about. In the Google searches on the Internet, you got to dig deep if you want to get to that stuff. So it's all shut out.
Oh,
but
yeah.
that tells you something. The corporations can only keep you away from the information if you're not seeking it. And if you're more interested
you know what?
In getting taken care of than you are in participating, which means that you don't want to be a free person. You just want to talk like a free person, but you don't want to be a free person until America wakes up. It won't happen.
And,
right.
and you made a good point is – and when you have to dig, because if you think, oh, I'm going to Google, I'm going to look at the first page of Google, I'm going to find something, no. You have to dig. You've got to put the effort forth because on the other side, there are people out there who are hired to actually make sure that stuff gets buried because the way they put, you know, Google, do a Google search, for instance, okay, it goes by how many hits. And the thing that gets the most hits gets to the first page, second page, so on and so forth.
you know.
Well, it's not just Google. It's all of them. YouTube, on their, quote, politics page, never has any alternate party voice unless you go off their politics page and do the search yourself. Guess what was trending on Twitter tonight? Hashtag RomneyRyan2012. Why? Because they've hired people to tweet about this crap in order to make sure that a hashtag like third-party debate or Good or Johnson doesn't trend.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's what they're using their money is to suppress the alternate voice, and we're eating it up. I mean, let's be honest. It's not that hard to find this stuff if you really want to look for it. But most people just want to pick, you know, Coke or Pepsi or, you know, Burger King or Wendy's. So, you know, I lean more conservative, so I'll vote Republican. Romney must be the conservative guy. Oh, I'm a total liberal. I'm looking for, you know, roses and sunshine and unicorns. So, you know, I'm going to vote for Obama because he's the Democrat. Well, guess what? Obama's not a liberal. Romney's not a conservative. So, you lost.
Absolutely correct. You want to hear a really weird, an odd thing that I caught? Remember when we lost the debate? Then we were they're interviewing the two illegal aliens.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I see that.
And then everybody was going off, and then you guys had shut it off, and then I had rebooted and found it right when I posted that. I was listening to another conversation after that.
You're talking about the Dream Act
right after. No, but listen, this is key. This shows you how insane liberals are. First of all, they were trying to show us why it's important that we allow all these illegals to be legal. And then, and of course, part of that is the suppression against anybody checking IDs. That's a big argument across the border states,
right.
You know, the suppression from the federal government. The next person gets on, and they're talking, and the next person gets on, some anti-gun activists, and they're all for IDs and background checks when it comes to our guns, but they're not. But if you go to the other group, they're all not for IDs and background checks.
Just, look at their hypocrites. Liberals are hypocrites.
Is this world hypocrites?
Look, there is no rational thought possible if you have a liberal mentality in the modern sense of the word liberal, lefty. Okay, it can't make any sense because you run your mouth about being free to be me and do whatever I want to do, and then you turn around and want to control everybody else. That's the problem. We're not honest with what we say our principles are. And this is the reason why Romney is got so-called conservatives voting for him, because we're not honest about actually being conservative. We say it, but then we're not willing to do anything about it because guess what? If you're truly conservative, that means responsibility. But if you vote for a guy like Romney, you don't have to worry about it. You know, they just print up the money. They move it around. You know, they pander to your moral issues and your social issues. And, you know,
they've done nothing about them.
Right. In 40 years, they haven't done anything about it. Then they'll drum up, you know, some kind of boogeyman and say, okay, we got to go across the world and slay monsters and rah, 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 USA, USA, USA. Look, if you really love your country, you only want to go to war to defend your country. Not somebody else's country. You don't want to go liberate Kuwait. You don't want to, you know, stand as the bastion against all these other countries. Now, granted, we have some agreements that you don't just, you know, pack up your toys and go home.
Walk away from.
Okay?
Right, right.
You know, going back towards the proper foreign policy and economic policy that you want is not a jarring overnight situation. It took us about 100 years to get here. It'll take us several years to unravel it. But let me tell you something. If we don't start doing it now, this Tuesday, then at some point it will come to a jarring halt very soon, sooner than any of us would like, and then what happens is you'll end up with total chaos. Oh, no, that won't happen in America. It's happened every other time in history, and it'll happen here, and then guess what? When you have chaos, Napoleon will come along or Caesar will come along and say, I can take away your pain. I can bring order. And Hitler and Stalin, you will say, yes, please, take away this confusion, this chaos, and this pain. Give us bread, give us water, and we'll give you our loyalty. And you can be in charge. That's how it's done. So if we don't do it now, it's going to come to a jarring halt later. And so everybody's like, well, you know, but all these alternate parties, it's just, you know, they don't have a chance of winning. Johnson actually said it tonight. None of us are stupid enough to think that Tuesday is about one of these candidates winning. Tuesday is about these parties getting access to the ballots for 2014 midterms and 2016 presidential elections. Because if we don't build it now, we're going to have a really tough time in 2014 and 2016. Everybody's like, oh, well, you know, but we have to get rid of Obama first. What's the point of getting rid of Obama to replace him with Obama? That doesn't make any sense. What you need to do is
if he has Boehner there to help him, that just scares crap out of me. I'm sorry.
Well, you know, I'm not going to go off topic. It's on topic, but it's not on the topic of tonight of the debate. But one of the silliest ideas I've ever heard is, well, you know what? Well, let's just go ahead and get Romney in there, and then we can impeach him for all the illegal stuff that he's done.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, what the heck's up with that? You know,
we didn't impeach the illegal alien that's in there right now. What makes you think you're going to impeach Romney? The Republicans didn't impeach the illegal alien, so they're going to impeach, you know, Romney. Come on, give me a break. The other stupid thing about it is if you're trying to build it so that you get the access to these alternate parties, which represent the true voice in America, especially conservatives, since most of us are really conservative, at least we say we are, then unfortunately, here's the real messed up part, the Romney victory actually hurts you. Because Romney will be the nominee in 2016 for the GOP because of the new rules, which allow the presumptive nominee, who's clearly the incumbent, to pick all the delegates, so the states have no power and no authority. So you're going to have Romney as the nominee in 2016, even if he doesn't win then, okay, and you say, okay, well, he didn't get in a year, he was one-term president just like Obama. The problem is that you won't have the opportunity to run a real conservative in the Republican Party in 2016. You won't get a chance to run a real conservative in the Republican Party until 2020.
You know why? You know why they did that? In my opinion, now that we have that hindsight is for that very reason right there, because he has plans that are going to freak out the base that voted for him. And they're going to want his butt out of there, and we won't have the power from the grassroots up and the states up to do it. This guy I said this in a post today. In my opinion, Obama's a wussy compared to this guy.
Oh, yeah. Well, Obama's just a puppet. Romney's not only a puppet. He's a member of the club. Gentlemen, I've got 9 minutes for TNR, so I've got to back out because I got to set it up.
See you over there.
Well, go ahead. If you want to promote that real quick, Rex, go ahead.
Sure. What time are you over tonight, 11:30?
11:30, yeah, because we want to wait until the debate was over.
All right. Well, Tex and Rex starts at 11. After Roberts, please join us over at the Tex and Rex show. As always, the first at least 30 minutes is going to be occupied by Tex and Rex anyway, so we won't be taking any callers. So feel free to join us. And, of course, if you're interested in the first half hour of the show, catch it in archives. And please click follow underneath the show icon for both Bart's Logic and Tex and Rex. You'll get notifications in your Blog Talk Radio profile for the show. So check out the Tex and Rex show after this show.
And also, if you got a link, go ahead and put it in chat. There's my voice going again.
I'll do that for you, Tex. I mean, Rex.
Yeah, all right.
Thanks, Chris.
Very
appreciate
much,
it.
General. See you soon.
See ya.
You got to run. I call him Tex.
Whatever.
That rhymes, right? You know.
I'm losing it, man.
Okay. Yes, we've got about 37 minutes. We'll make sure that we don't go over tonight as we've done recently. There you go. I see it in the chat. That's great. So if the folks,
you got it. Okay.
Yep. So folks in the chat, if you are a guest in the chat, one of two things. One, of course, you could sign up to so you can actually read the chat. But if you're a guest and you cannot see the chat, because I believe people signed in as guests cannot see chat. You can find the Rex and I'm sorry, it's the Tex and Rex show on Blog Talk Radio. Just go to the on air part of the homepage of Blog Talk Radio, and then scroll down in the categories, and you can find the Tex and Rex show in the election 2012 category. Just find it there and click on it. And also for the folks in the listen to this archives who do not have the benefit of the chat, that is where you can go to listen to the archive of their show as well. So,
very
Chris,
good.
Let's bring it back to the debate.
The staggered debate.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we worked through it, and then
pick a question. I think you you were a little more organized on notes than I was.
Well, we were talking about, of course, the militarization of foreign policy, and one thing I wanted to see if I heard correctly, when Anderson was talking about wars of aggression, and I don't know if you talked about Iraq and Afghanistan.
What other kind of war is there?
Was there a point where he was comparing us with the Germans? Because wasn't he talking about the Nuremberg trials and things of that nature?
I laughed so hard I choked. I'm sorry.
That's okay. Wasn't he talking about the Nuremberg trials? He was kind of comparing the United States with Nazi Germany?
Unfortunately, when Rocky talks with the way that the thing was skipping, he would lose portions of his sentences the way that the Ustream was skipping. So I had a hard time following. I caught that, and I'm like going, he was talking about there was some treaties and some rule, you know, international rulings and things like that, that actually on an international level that says that countries aren't supposed to do what we're doing. And I found that interesting, but unfortunately, it kept skipping through that, so I missed the details of it. But I would honestly say, And I think for all of us who started out our research studying Ron Paul and then coming back to the, you know, Constitution Party and Libertarian Party and their positions on foreign powers, is that we've been abusing our, not only our Constitution, but kind of abusing the world a little bit too for a long time. You know, my mom, my history major mother said, we haven't had a constitutional war since the Second World War. And I'm like, wow. So, you know, what have we been doing? What are we doing out there? I still haven't finished that document I'm working on that is going to outline. I'm going to run down a running list of all the wars. There's so many conflicts we've been involved in, you know, that are these undeclared conflicts. I mean, you know, Nicaragua, all this, South America, all over the place, friends I've known through my lifetime. Oh, yeah, I was in Afghanistan, you know, I had a friend that was black ops in Afghanistan. I'm like, what the hell were you doing there? You know, just all this stuff. So I'm actually working on a timeline and putting all that information together because, you know, if what they are saying is true, and I believe it because Good says it all the time, if the Congress does not declare a war and vote on it, we are not supposed to do it. So it isn't just the big ones, you know, like Iraq or Afghanistan. It goes back for decades. It goes back to the 40s.
Okay,
that's kind of a
shocking
thing, you know.
Well, speaking of shocking, someone put this in the chat, and I thank you, Barbara, for the article, and it's a short article, so
go for it.
I'll read it the best of my voice abilities. It's kind of short. So I kind of glanced through it. So let's go ahead and read this real quick and then get back with discussion of tonight's debate. But this does have to do with the election. And so the debate had something had to do with the election. So we'll go ahead and read this because it is relevant. It says, what is Project ORCA? The running campaign, ORCA, O-R-C-A.
Yeah. Like the whale. Got it.
Like the whale, exactly. And they mentioned the whale in this brief article. It says, the Romney campaign has stepped up to make a monumental change in the way campaigns are run. Project ORCA is the Election Day Task Force using the best of the best reliable volunteers to monitor polling places. If successfully executed, will be the standard for all future campaigns. And no, ORCA is not an acronym. It stands for the killer whale, the king of the sea. Even the name screams, we are not your typical Beltway show. The purpose of Project ORCA is to efficiently allocate resources on Election Day using the information on the ground from 20,000 volunteers placed strategically in polling places across the nation. Using 20 years of says using 20 years of voter information and micro-targeting data, the Romney campaign has a 93% chance of knowing who each voter is casting their ballot for. Project Orca will allow the Romney campaign to instantaneously know who has walked into vote at every polling place across the country in which they have strategically placed their volunteers. Volunteers of Project Orca will be credentialed poll watchers who will record who votes at their polling place through a small phone app preloaded with the registered voters specific to that polling place. The app will already have the early and absentee voters recorded on it to allow the Romney legal team to contest votes from those early and often voters. The information will be relayed directly to Governor Romney at the War Room in Boston, which he will use to make tactical decisions based on the data that is sent back. If there is a low turnout in an area where Romney should be winning, they will start the robocalls in that area and get out the vote tactics. Project Orca data will be linked in with the Romney Phone From Home program and Victory Centers. Election Day volunteers will be able to use the Project Orca data to focus on calling the pro-Romney voters who haven't voted yet, which means no more wasting time and resources on people that have already voted. Too often, political campaigns have a lack of information on polling day to know how to most effectively spend time and resources to getting out the vote. Project Orca will be feeding from on-the-ground poll watchers to accurately know who has voted and allow the Romney campaign to maximize turnout on all fronts. The reason why Project Orca is so important is because there are 7 or 8 states that could go in any direction. Think about that. 8 swing states, including Virginia, which is very important, folks. If the Romney campaign does not have a spot on ground game, it could sacrifice the election. Project Orca is the most novel, state-of-the-art electioneering that has ever been used in such a magnitude, and the Obama campaign has nothing comparable to the intricate and well-thought-out Romney election plan. And if we have learned anything from campaigns, it all comes down to getting out the vote. Project Orca is a turning point in the history of electioneering, and the strategy will be repeated the years to come. And thank you once again, Barbara, for putting that article in the chat. Go ahead, Chris. You want to comment on that real quick before we go ahead and get back to the debate?
Sounds like he's got all the resources of the CIA and the rest of them at his fingertips. That's pretty cool.
Indeed. I tell you what.
Let me ask you, here's my comment. Too bad they didn't use that against the Romney campaign for all the election fraud all the way from starting with the initial state all the way to the RNC convention, because if they did, he wouldn't be the nominee. How about them apples?
Indeed. Yeah, well, I tell you what, as it said, 8 states up for grabs, one of those including Virginia, and if folks are out there interested in the Stop 270, you know, in Virginia, if you're a conservative, I would suggest voting for a Virgil Goode in Virginia, because he's got the best chance of the third parties in Virginia to win it, and Virginia can be such an important swing state in this election. If Virgil Goode was to take Virginia and all the other states fall into where the polls
Paul
are looking.
Paul takes Maine, Goode takes Virginia, Johnson takes New Mexico.
Right.
You know.
But it could only be one. One state, the state of Virginia, I mean, and there's other states too, Chris. I mean, I would even add to it, which would be terrific. That's how it could be. I mean, people are like, oh, it's so far-fetched. One state could keep both Romney and Obama from getting the 270. Go ahead, Chris.
Why do you think they have worked so hard to suppress third party? Nobody likes either one of these guys. You know what I mean? They have disaffected voters in the 100 million. I don't know why people can't just piece these things together for themselves. The information's out there, like Rex says. But if you look at it, you know, and I posted the articles months ago, and you hear me quoting it all the time.
30-35% of voters on both sides cannot stand their candidate, but the problem is they can't stand the other guy either, so they're not going to cross over. They're just going to stay home. And the reason they're going to stay home and because they got nobody to vote for. They don't know about third-party options. Well, more people do today, but
right.
It's been a momentous amount of energy to get that information out there because of the suppression. But if you think about it, you just look at this stuff, and you know, all people have to do is get up, and they would change the direction of our country in one cycle. And I don't know how to get the information out anymore. I don't. But you know, this is it's disgusting what's going on in this country today, especially after everything that Americans have been through. You know, the last 4 or 5 years. I got one for you. Listen to this. Romney supporters illegally imprisoned at Pennsylvania campaign rally. Boy, you're going to love this. It's short. Citing security concerns, Romney supporters were not allowed to leave his Pennsylvania campaign rally, even though the crowd had been waiting in the freezing cold for the tardy candidate for hours. Reporters at the event tweeted the chaos that Romney supporters were forbidden to leave the event. Michael Barbaro of the New York Times, "We've got to get out. My daughter's frostbitten," begs mom, asking to leave Romney rally. Staffers reply, "It's cold enough for that. It's not cold enough for that." And so he imprisoned his supporters. And he was late to a rally and wouldn't let anybody leave.
Oh, yeah. Here's a thank
you, Eric. Must be some of that Project Orca stuff at work there, huh?
Well, I'll tell you what, Eric put and thank you, Eric, for putting this article in the chat. And I've seen this, and by gosh, I wanted to read this before, and I just have not had the chance to. On the time we were talking about, the Electoral College count, the polls and things of that nature. And,
sure.
You know, I just want to make this brief. So, folks, yeah, it's actually from the HuffingtonPost.com and October 8th, Virtual Good, Virginia. Here's you could probably Google the title. It says, Virgil Good, former Virginia congressman, may pose risk for Mitt Romney. Rocky Mountain, Virginia. Virgil Good knows his obscure presidential run on the Constitution Party ticket vexes his former Republican comrades, a thought that produces a sly smile he can't suppress. He does really try. So to Virginia Republicans, however, the eccentric former GOP congressman from whatever, Rocky Mountains, threatens to peel away conservative votes from Mitt Romney, and in a close race, well, they say hand the Virginia's 13 Electoral College votes and possibly 4 more years to President Obama. But if he could take it, then it would take it away from all of them. So if enough folks vote for, my thing is, forget about voting for Romney. If you're conservative and you're in Virginia, or you knew somebody in Virginia, tell them, look, forget about voting Romney in Virginia. If you're conservative, vote for Virgil Good. Vote for the, Liberty Party, Grassroots Party, We the People Party, which that's kind of a generic term I'm saying, I say for all the third parties. The terms for all the third parties is, if you're conservative, forget about vote for him. Vote for Virgil Good, and if he could take Virginia, then that would keep, the 270 from going to each one of those candidates. But of course, as I'm reading through more of the polls, they're talking about, Virgil Good could actually help Obama win, whatever. But, that's definitely not the goal. The goal is to win it and to keep the 270 from not just Obama, but from, Romney too. So, not just from Romney,
but
from Obama.
Man, they do not like Romney. They don't like Romney in Illinois at all. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. What did he do to them up there? Did he close some factories?
Well,
some jobs overseas?
That's Obama's state. I mean, you know, so.
What's that got to do with anything? I mean, Illinois is in bad shape.
Well, you know, and here's a quote from Goode. You know, he says, from the article, and thank you once again for supplying it, Eric, says, I think I will get even more votes from disgruntled Democrats, more people who are going to stay home and not vote because there's no choice, Goode said. He notes he's the only candidate running without big money backing. You know, so that's important. So there could, you know, because there are, I mean, believe it or not, there are conservative Democrats out there. You know,
yeah,
and they
the
might
big
be like,
time. The Southern Democrats? Oh, yeah.
Right. So, I mean, he could very well, you know, and I did ask him about it, you know, when I had lunch with him a couple of weeks ago, and he just kind of smiled and said, we'll just look at the polls, you know. But, you know, I've talked to a few other people who, you know, we'll see. Will it be enough to win it? We'll see. But if you get enough people, as I said this about to people who say, oh, third party can't win. Well, you know, as any candidate, as any party, if enough folks vote for them, they can win. You know, I was chatting to somebody today, and they're like, oh, well, you know, voting third parties, they can't win, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, they can win if enough people vote for them. That goes for anybody. So it's like football, since it's a football season. We all heard that phrase, any given Sunday, right? Well, any given election, if you get enough people to vote for a certain party, certain candidate, that candidate and party can win. Go ahead, Chris.
You know, I'm sitting here, you know, the little maps where you hover over them off this article to the right. Of course, it's Huffington Post, so you've got to take, you know, a little grain of salt on their stats, on their polls. But I'm just looking at these states, and I have this sarcasm flowing through my mind, and I wonder if these red states realize that they're actually voting for a Democrat, a liberal progressive, if that
right.
has really sunk in their mind yet.
I don't think so. I think they've been made so afraid of Obama that this clouds over.
Well, when China owns this and he finishes his deals. I guess his son's over there in Russia cutting deals with Russia right now, even though Romney claims he's going to be tough on Russia. And I don't know if he's sold his Iran stock in the state-owned oil companies yet.
Mm-hmm.
But I wonder just how what they think future America under this man is supposed to be. I have no clue. It's going to be interesting.
And you got Anderson talking about, oh, we got to, you know, the investments, you know, the make. We all know what investment means. Oh, well, we have to invest in this. We have to invest in that. Well, we know that means spending money. And when they talk about doing tax cuts, you know, or doing not tax cuts, but cuts in spending, they're talking about actually just cutting the increases, not actually cutting spending. You know what I mean?
Well, it's all lies. Until you get those two amendments and the Fed dealt with, none of this is going to change.
What about Stein talking about the
unconstitutional. Oh, I heard that.
Stein talking about the progressive
bag.
Income tax.
Yeah, I had to grab my barf bag. You know. Yeah, until people wake up, the next 4 years. You think this 4 years have been tough? Stick around under either administration. Stick around, and hopefully, regardless of, like I said, to me personally, it doesn't matter who gets in. It's going to be the same issues. You know,
mm-hmm.
one's a corporatist socialist and one's a Marxist socialist. So what? You know, same difference,
right.
Same people, same backers, same people, and so. You know, no solutions, neither one of them, except they got up there and, you know, definitely there's a war coming because both of them just spent a whole debate trying to prove who was the tougher of the two presidents and who was going to spend more money and blow up more crap, you know what I mean? I mean, that's all that came out of that was just, you know, pandering to prepping us for the war. So, you know, we'll see. 2014 is going to be key. Bottom line, and I say this over and over and over again, when this is all said and done on November 7th, what are you going to do?
Mm-hmm. There's going to be a lot more work to do.
I know I have posted information.
I've posted information on down ballot every day, consistently putting stuff out, doing the research, putting the information out. People going, well, I'm in Texas. Okay, well, here's your down ballot candidates. You know, you pick the top. Nobody can tell you who to vote for, but, you know, look for those Liberty candidates.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Well, I know here in the first district of Ohio where I live, there's a Republican running, a Democrat, a Libertarian, and a Green Party.
Yeah, Ohio, there's 21 Libertarians running. You know, so you got Conservative Party in Ohio, in your area.
Conservative Party, not a Constitution.
I mean, Constitution
Party.
Party.
No. Well, only for president. Only for president.
Right.
And then
so you look at
Condit's supposed to be running against Boehner, but that's the 8th district, so that's not my district.
Now, is he actually physically running against him in the runoff, or is he still in the runoff against Boehner?
That's a good question, because my wife looked at a ballot recently, and she didn't see Condon's name on it, because I asked her to look for it.
I'm wondering if that was a runoff candidate, and now Boehner's on the top. I heard that.
It doesn't show it on the ballot. I'll have to look that up, right?
It's a bloody shame that Condit didn't get it, because Condit is a great guy. And
I'd like to have him on the show, but I understand with, you know, the election coming near, it might have to wait till after the election, since it is only a couple of days. And I'm also hoping to get Ben Swan from the Reality Checks on Tuesday. But what I'm thinking about doing is putting something on the website with Ben Swan's email or something, try to get an email campaign going to say, hey, come on to the show, you know, but we'll see. I know because
I'm sure he is.
Go ahead, Chris. I know he's in the media, so it might have to be very careful on where he speaks. So.
Yeah, I'm sure he is. You know, I had a thought. I just posted something. Anyway, back to, I didn't get a chance to finish what I was saying.
No, go ahead.
And this is important. I just posted a link. It is the best thing I've seen on what is a libertarian and what are the different types of libertarians. Some guy put together a video.
Yeah, you're talking about
and this. And it's extremely detailed. He breaks it down into six different types of libertarians, going from Tea Party type people through the paleo libertarians, right on down to the narco capitalists. And it helps you understand, because I know that in some of our conversations and the shows and on Facebook, you know, people who are strong social conservatives, you know, get all freaked out because they've heard Johnson's positions. But I keep saying this, and I know Kelly's kept saying this, is that they're not all like that. And Randy's even said it. You know, he actually, when he lost his governor's race, he backed a pro-life libertarian. And I think that, you know, we've got to help people understand, what is the difference between a Johnson libertarian and a Ron Paul libertarian? Because there are differences, especially.
And Chris, what's the for the folks who are listening to this on the archive, or will, you know, be listening to this in the archive? What is? I know it's on YouTube, but it's kind of a convoluted link. So usually I'll read a link, but it's too long and drawn out. So on YouTube, if you could tell us what the title
Six types of libertarians.
Okay, thank you.
And it's a very good, and actually it's Ron Paul and the six types of libertarianism, because the guy who put the link together, and it's fairly new,
mm-hmm.
the guy who built it was showing people why Ron Paul was able to capture that, you know, such a diverse group of people, because the Libertarian Party is very diverse. You know, from what Rex calls the libertines, or all the way, like I said, to the narco-capitalists, all the way up to people who would be Tea Party or paleo-libertarians, who are more socially conservative,
because a lot of people don't get this about Ron Paul. He is a very strong social conservative. He just doesn't believe the federal government's got the solutions. So when you look at this, it's important because there's a lot of libertarians. There's 569 libertarians down ballot available to be voted on if you do not have, if you don't have, like, let's say you want to vote for a Constitution Party. Well, if you ain't got one, you don't have one. So you've got to take a look at the remaining candidates. So don't let that libertarian, that libertarian word stop you from voting in a good candidate. Because we need constitutional people in office.
Because I only have a Constitution Party candidate here in the 1st District for Congress, and we don't have any Liberty parties in the Senate. But we only have two guys in the Senate, one Republican and one Democrat, running here for the Senate where I'm at. But now, what would since Gary Johnson was, of course, at this debate, it would be interesting to see which category Johnson would fit into of the six types of libertarians.
I actually have it right here. Keep talking while I'm reading.
Sure. Well, because, you know, he was talking, tonight about crony capitalism, transparency, you know, and campaigns. He's also talking about getting rid of, D.C. lobbyists.
Most libertarians, and this is what Rex has been saying for a long time, is when it comes to limited government and fiscal responsibility, you ain't going to have a problem with that with a libertarian, because they are that.
It's just the social way I fix it all, folks.
Yeah, it's just, I think where you're going to get in your gray areas, where people are going to have challenges, is the social issues, whether it's abortion, marriage, pot, whatever. Open borders.
Johnson said tonight, he was knowing the bailouts. He was talking about giving, how they gave loans to folks who couldn't afford
them. I love his economic standpoints. I'm not all in agreement on where these guys are going with this fair tax or, these value-added taxes, because I think there's more to it than that. But, I have no problem with his social or constitutional issues.
Yeah, well, one thing I found interesting that he said tonight, when he was talking about, of course, stopping the duopoly, which, of course, is, what he'd like to see done, he's talking about, getting 5% to eliminate the ballot access problems, which I agree with, of course. But one of the things he said that gave me pause was talking about getting the 5% so they can match federal funding.
Well, I don't understand that, because I thought they already had some match funds, because I saw an interview where they were asking about that, and I haven't
followed up on it. But if they're against the federal government being involved, why would they even want to accept federal funding for their campaign?
Yeah, well, that...
I
mean, Johnson has crossed a couple lines that would arguably be non-libertarian policies. Number one, federal, gay marriage... marriage issue. He took a position on that. I heard that thing about that match funds, and I'm like, excuse me? And so that's the thing that why this video is a must for people to listen to, because you can help separate people out. And you got to remember, though, Johnson was not born and bred a libertarian. He was a Republican.
Mm-hmm.
With libertarian leanings, who decided to get in the Libertarian Party, and we won't know the full story about Johnson until after the election. I keep saying that to people, because I have a mixed group, and I keep saying to people, I say, I love some of his policies. I don't like some of them, and I love some other ones. Here's the challenge. I want to know if he's going to stay in the party. And let's see what happens after November 7th, because that's when we're going to find out who these people are.
Well, and with that, unfortunately, we'll have to get ready to wrap things up. There's only about 5 minutes left in the show. Just that I don't want to run over, because I like folks to go to the the Tex and Rex show after this, which
you gotta
the
hear this.
Links is in the chat. And then, but also, there's a little bit of the election schedule. There will not be a Bard's Logic political talk show on tomorrow night. However, there will be a Tex and Rex show tomorrow night covering the election or discussing
the
election.
Well, so the second debate.
The second debate. They'll be talking about that as well tomorrow night. So we go on to the Tex and Rex show to find out the times. Cause do you know what the times are for that that's going out tomorrow?
For what?
Well, the Tex and Rex, their show tomorrow. I don't know exactly. I
11?
Can't remember exactly what time they'll
11.
Be on tomorrow night.
I thought it was 11.
It's 11? Okay. So
yeah, I got to read you some. I got to read you something really short just to show you how insane this Republicans are with Romney. You get those little sponsored ads
side. But real quick, go ahead. But I don't want to lose the live folks because they only have about 4 minutes.
15 seconds, I'd have been done.
No, what's that short? Okay, go ahead.
The reason it's a sponsored ad. The reason I'm voting for Romney because he's going to replace Obamacare. Now, how many times does that change? Go ahead. I'm done.
With what? Romney Care, which is pretty much the father
he's
of.
He's going to replace Obamacare. Yeah, it started out as a repeal of Obamacare. Remember? That's what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Right. There will be on election night. Bard's Logic Political Talk will be on election night. From 10 p.m. till midnight, covering and discussing an analysis on the election, including the results coming in. I don't know if we'll know by by midnight that night who will be the victor, but we could still discuss it as it's happening on Tuesday evening. So I probably will call in for a little bit on the Tex and Rex show tomorrow night. So, but since there's only 3 minutes left, I'd like to thank everyone for coming in tonight, listening to the show. And then I'll look forward to seeing you on Tuesday. And very important, get out and vote. Vote your conscience. If you are in a state in which you are, a Republican or a Democrat that you usually side with, definitely cannot win. Give the third party candidates a shot and vote for one that's most closely adheres to your ideology. And so thank you very much again for coming in. I will end tonight's show as I do every show, and that is with the song. Thank you, everyone, again. Take care and have a good night.